Welcome to the Sirikawa Eugene's November the 3rd, 2017 program, Iowa Night Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. This is the ninth program in our 2017-2018 program in year. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, immediate board president, filling in for Sandra Bishop. The City Club brings together civic-minded people to make a Eugene a better place to live, work, and of course, play. We are a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on public policy. You want to become a member today? It's very easy. You go to our website, www.cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. That includes the AARP of Oregon, Mobasagi Plastic Surgery, and Siva Medical Spa, Evan Elder Brown in Svirt Commercial Real Estate, Gators Turnside in Balta, PC Attorneys Allah, and a special thanks to Packing for Internet Solutions, to KLCC Radio. Citica programs are aired or broadcast on Mondays at KLCC 89.7 at 6:30, again on Mondays. And of course, to the Baker Center for hosting us every Friday at this time. The coordinator of this program is Sandra Bishop. So thank you, Sandra, even you're not here, for organizing this very important discussion. Now, let me turn things over to Sandy Erickson, who will graciously agree to introduce our speaker here today. Please help me welcome Sandy Erickson.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Our speaker today, Chris Edwards, is the new University of Oregon Assistant Vice President for Strategic Initiatives. Glad I got that out in one piece there. A big title to match the big projects on UO's to-do list. Prior to this position, Chris served 3 years in the Oregon House and 7 years in the Oregon Senate, resigning in 2014 to accept this new position. His first assignment is coordinating the UO Night Campus project, and his first task is to see that the $500 million from Phil and Penny Knight is matched with $500 million of state and private donations within the next 10 years. The goal is $1 billion to complete the Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. And, no surprise, Chris is already making an impact. Using his experience as a state lawmaker, Chris can already take credit for a pledge of a state general obligation bond of $50 million toward the UO Knight Campus from the Oregon Legislature. Congratulations on that one. Prior to his present position, Chris had a long experience in his family's forest products business, and in his legislative role as a moderate Democrat, Chris advocated for lower-income Oregonians and championed environmentally responsible legislation. He was chair of the Senate Environmental and Natural Resources Committee and was a strong proponent for a carbon cap and trade bill. Also, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, he served on the Education Subcommittee for 5 years. City Club is fortunate to have Chris Edwards, UO's new Assistant Vice President for Strategic Initiatives, to talk about how the university will take the Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact from idea to reality. Chris?
Thank you, Sandy, for the kind introduction. You might have embellished a little bit on my role in getting some support from the state. And in fact, just to be clear, I was not in Salem this last legislative session. I just wanted to be clear. I was actually prohibited by law from being in Salem and lobbying with the legislature, but have been working very diligently with our government relations team because, you know, I do have some experience having served in Salem for 10 years. Thank you to Sandra Bishop, who is not here today, but was kind enough to invite me to share a little bit about the innovation vision for the Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. Now, I know that's a lot of words to remember, and it tends to come out as the Knight Science Center or that science thing that you guys are doing at the university. So I'd like to clarify one last time. It is called the Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. I invite you, if it's easier to remember just the Knight Campus, to call it the Knight Campus. Now that we've got that out of the way, I'm going to spend about the next 20, 25 minutes sharing with you a little bit about the innovation vision. We're going to use 8 simple slides. But before we get too far into it, I want to provide a little bit of background context and go over the last few years that led to today. In 2013, at the request of universities frustrated by a one-size-fits-all approach that often held the institutions back, the legislature passed a bill giving each of Oregon's 7 public universities the opportunity to break free from the centralized control of the Oregon university system and establish their own local institutional governing board. 1 year later, on July 1st of 2014, the University of Oregon Board of Trustees took over governance of the university and immediately sought to raise the academic profile, the research esteem, and ultimately the value of the university to the students and to the state. To execute on this vision, the board hired Michael Schill, the 5th president in person, to sit at the helm of the university in just 7 years. So that much turnover in just the previous 7 years had hamstrung the university's ability to adapt, affect change, and identify a clear path forward for improvement and modernization. The new governing board and the new president were critical in bringing stability to the helm, encouraging a culture of excellence, and moving the UO forward. Can you imagine if you were in a competitive race, say you're driving in the Indianapolis 500, and you pull over into the pit stop for a quick tire change and a fuel up, but then they didn't get the tires right, and so then they try on another set of tires, and another set of tires, and another set of tires. Meanwhile, you're losing a lot of ground in this highly competitive race. Well, for a period of time at the university, with so much turnover at the top, it had become difficult to move forward and launch bold initiatives. And this was at a time when the world was moving at an ever-increasing pace. So President Schill wasted no time getting to work to put the university back on track. Among other things, he went to the science faculty and asked them to think big, to think really big. You know, give me your moonshot proposal. And what they came back with was indeed grand. And it had to be. You see, the top research universities in the country have either engineering schools or medical schools or both. Engineering and medical schools tend to scoop up the lion's share of federal research dollars. And you're probably thinking right now, oh yeah, I guess the University of Oregon doesn't have an engineering school or a medical school. We're not ashamed of that. We are a top research university in the liberal arts tradition with many shining areas of strength. For instance, our College of Education ranks in the top 5 in the country, and we're proud of that. But we could do more in the sciences if we had the resources to execute on a big vision. So this idea had to be big if the university and the state of Oregon were going to maintain its ability to compete for the top minds in the region, the nation, and the world. Their grand proposal from the faculty to build a new applied science campus for the life and physical sciences that would be equipped with modern scientific instrumentation to grow existing fields of research and to accommodate new fields of research at the university, and to design the campus both physically and programmatically to attract the top scientific minds in their fields, designed the buildings to promote collaboration and an integrative, multidisciplinary approach to the sciences and discovery, and finally designed the campus to take laboratory innovation and develop it into real-world solutions that will have a positive impact on society. That inspiring plan was presented to Phil and Penny Knight, and they said, "We're in." And not only did they go in, but they went in big, to the tune of $500 million. Their generosity has been extraordinary and has enabled the university to launch this billion-dollar initiative with a plan that is tuition neutral, not requiring any tuition dollars from existing departments or programs to support the Knight campus. Now, last week, as you may have seen, we got our first public view at the and look at the design of those beautiful buildings, which are integral to the success of the Knight campus. But it's about so much more than the buildings. It's about the people, the students, the research, the programs, and an approach to science that will intentionally facilitate the creation of entrepreneurial ventures to take innovations to market. That will be the long-term legacy of the Knight campus. But we won't need to wait for research projects to culminate in new products that are out in the market to start seeing the economic impacts of the project here in our community. In fact, these impacts will begin this coming February when we begin our $225 million construction project building a 160,000 square foot state-of-the-art research facility. And I would like to take a minute to thank the legislature for an initial $50 million of support this biennium and a commitment to the second $50 million next biennium. Without the support of the legislature, we would have had to pare back the scale of the building and cut some of the spaces important to the more outward-facing and focused features of the campus. Our hometown team here in Eugene and Springfield were all supportive. Senator James Manning, Senator Floyd Przanski, and Representatives Phil Barnhart, Julie Fahey, and John Lively each stood strong for the project, and we appreciate that. And I want to call particular attention to some heavy lifting by Representative Paul Holvey, a South Eugene local and chair of the subcommittee that made the decision on the capital spending projects, Senator Lee Beyer, who was our anchor in the Senate, and of course, my dear friend and colleague, Representative Nancy Nathanson, whom I really miss working with in the legislature. We shared part of a district together. She's so thoughtful, she's so responsible, and of course, she is the House co-chair of Ways and Means. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the legislature, the legislative process, and don't know anything about what that title means, being the co-chair of Ways and Means means that you have the awesome responsibility of being one of two people that constructs the budget on which the rest of the legislature votes. And when I say awesome, I don't mean awesome like, yay, this is so fun. I mean awesome as in it's really heavy, weighty stuff that she deals with. So thank you to all of our legislators who have helped us get this far. Because of that support, we expect that during peak construction, we will be creating 1,300 local construction jobs that are generating $11 million in state and local tax revenue. And of course, we'll see the ancillary effects at stores and restaurants and whatnot here in the economy. But that's just during the construction phase. Now, of course, once we build the place, we need to staff the place. And our first cohort of researchers will move in to the Knight campus in January of 2020. And then, as they staff up and hire new lead researchers from around the globe, the Knight campus community will grow to somewhere in the neighborhood of 250 to 300 new positions through 2025. And we expect that these brilliant minds will increase the number of externally generated research dollars coming into our community by somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million annually. According to economic analysis performed by Eco Northwest, when including these researchers plus direct support staff and employment elsewhere in the community to support the Knight campus, we expect that the Knight campus will create 750 ongoing jobs. That in and of itself is a good story. That's a great story. But at the heart of the Knight campus for accelerating scientific impact is its mission and vision. What I call the accelerant that will drive something far more impactful than just increased research dollars coming into our community. And that is robust engagement with the private sector, startup entrepreneurship, a more meaningful student experience, and increased philanthropy. Those outcomes could not be captured in the economic analysis, but we know that they are going to be game-changing. So let's talk a little bit about that mission and vision, what I've called termed the accelerant behind the campus. The mission for this grand plan that we have can be summarized in three very succinct words: science advancing society. When the faculty developed this mission statement, they just felt that this so well embodied the mission that they were frankly surprised when they did a trademark search to find that it hadn't already been taken by some other institute somewhere else in the world, or in the U.S. And so we're excited about that, and that is now the official mission: Science Advancing Society. The vision is to dramatically shorten the timeline between discovery and societal impact through world-class research, training, and entrepreneurship in a nimble scientific enterprise. I love that vision, and the vision is so important. Each of those words is really critical because that is our true north. But I particularly like the word nimble. I really like that word. Nimble is dynamic and adaptive. Nimble knows how to fail and get up and try again. Nimble has grit. Nimble is industrious. And that's what it takes to succeed in science-based entrepreneurship. So what might engagement with the private sector and entrepreneurship and the economic activity look like on an ongoing basis? Now, I want to profess by acknowledging that as a former manager of a small forest products company, feels like eons ago now, and then later an international trade guy, and I spent a decade in the legislature, I am not a professor of entrepreneurship, nor am I a venture capitalist. I'm not a startup guru. I've never run a startup incubator or an accelerator. So there are folks in the community that know much more about those particular areas than I do. But I did spend the past 4 months investigating various models for universities to use when engaging with the private sector and helping to create startup opportunities and exploring the role of the university in the startup ecosystem. I read white papers and books and spent a lot of time on the road visiting with institutions and professionals that do it well in an effort to get a sense of the various approaches and models that are used and to learn valuable lessons from those that have gone before us. I visited with people at or from various places like North Carolina State, Florida, Hudson Alpha in Huntsville, Alabama, Purdue Research Foundation, Georgia Tech, University of Michigan, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, University of Chicago, University of Wisconsin, which has a renowned life sciences program, USC, UC Santa Barbara, UC Davis, and Stanford. I also spent time with the Oregon Bioscience Association and the Oregon Bioscience Incubator. And along the way, I had a lot of conversations with university officials and program directors and intellectual property attorneys and life science startup execs and mentors and venture capitalists. And I could distill the essence of everything that I learned into kind of a couple of buckets to think about. First, there will be opportunities at the university, at the Knight campus, for accelerating scientific impact to engage with the private sector. So I'm just going to call that private sector engagement. And then the other is our the other pertains to our role in the startup ecosystem. So let's look just really briefly at private sector engagement. Now, any university that does private sector engagement well could engage in any one of these activities or all of these activities. And for those that'll be listening on the radio, I'll read those off out loud. That's internships, workforce development, managerial and executive professional development, access to labs, equipment, and office space, research park, and corporate-sponsored research. So let's delve into each of those. Internships, of course, these provide students in the sciences real-world experience that typically jumpstarts their career after graduation while giving employers access to top talent coming out of the university. Workforce development. This involves training the workforce of tomorrow to meet the employment needs of the new smart science-based economy. This talent pipeline enables science-based companies to consider establishing outposts or facilities here in Oregon. Managerial and executive development opportunities. If, as a community, we are interested in recruiting science-based companies to locate here in Oregon, we ought to consider offering early and mid-career career development education opportunities. Perhaps folks that work in those companies, employees for those companies, want the opportunity to be able to go back to school, earn a master's degree, something of the sort. Access to lab equipment and office space. So access to a specialized lab, a wet lab, laboratory equipment, high-tech scientific scientific instrumentation, and even the opportunity to rent office space inside an academic campus are all things that have been highly sought after in other places in the country at other campuses that do these types of things. Research park. There comes a time when growing the private sector engagement enterprise that a robust modern research park would make sense, designed with today's needs in mind, including space for companies who wish to have a presence at or near the university, but also with modern co-working spaces for early and small stage companies, entrepreneurs who want to be a part of that entrepreneurial ecosystem at or in or near the university. And then finally, there's always the opportunity for corporate-sponsored research, whether that research is partially or entirely funded by a private sector entity. Oftentimes, companies find that universities, because they have so many fields of research, can bring together a multidisciplinary scientific strike team, if you will, to solve a problem. And they're just better equipped to do that than the private entity. So some universities do these things really well, and some try and struggle. Some do just a few of them, and some do none. And it should be noted that these types of activities look different at an engineering school or an agricultural school or at a life sciences campus or physical sciences campus like we're building. But regardless, the opportunities are there. Now, it occurs to me that I've been using the term life science and I haven't defined the term life science. And so I should probably touch on that. So just we're all thinking in the same along the same way. So when I think life science, I think biology and all the sciences that touch biology, molecular biology, biochemistry, neurosciences, genomics, that's the study of the human genome. All of these things are under the vast umbrella of life sciences. Okay, so moving on to the second bucket of considerations that we ought to be thinking about, and that is the university's role, the Knight campus's role in the startup ecosystem. Now, startup ecosystems, first and foremost, need space. Now, space is often found inside of a startup incubator, and we'll touch on incubators, which are an item on the slide as well, here in a moment. Or that space could be located partially inside the Knight campus itself. Startup companies need spaces that are affordable and they need spaces that provide them the access to, in this case, specialized equipment and lab space. Now, we also have incubators and accelerators. Incubators and accelerators provide the rest of these services. They typically have entrepreneurs or mentors in residence, maker spaces that are fully equipped with 3D printers and other essential tools for building modern product prototypes, proof of concept guidance and mentoring, business plan development, coaching on how to access capital, lots of programming, courses, workshops, events, networking events, access to professional services, and of course, access to capital, networking into seed funding networks. Perhaps an incubator or an accelerator even hosts a seed fund itself. All of these things are necessary to have a robust and thriving entrepreneurial and startup ecosystem. All of them could be at the Knight campus, or we could partner with RAIN, the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network, which has already shown a lot of promise, is doing a lot of great things right here in Eugene. RAIN is a partnership between the University of Oregon, the city, and the state in a startup incubator. But there will be some things that we need to develop as a community. Regardless of the model, there will be some things that we need to develop because we're talking about life sciences. Life sciences are heavily regulated by the FDA, and they require a boatload of capital typically to get off the ground. So it's a little bit different than programming an app, okay? I was talking with a life science attorney just last week who said, Chris, a lot of people, because the life sciences are based on intellect and intellectual property, they tend to think of it as the knowledge-based economy. So they equate it to things like software and computer science. But he said, really, you know, it's a lot more similar to mining. It requires a boatload of capital up front that's invested in a good guess, you know, an educated guess. You invest a lot of money in the equipment and the time and everything, and then you may hit pay dirt, or you may not, and you start over. And so, you know, when he said that, I started thinking, yeah, that is interesting, and that, because as I talk with people in the community, a lot of people are thinking, okay, startup ecosystem, thinking about entrepreneurship, thinking about the incubator here that we have locally, and thinking about, okay, so, you know, we have mentors and residents at RAIN, and we have a lot of the programming and everything, but it is a little bit different when you get into the life sciences, and the life science funding networks, the venture capital networks are very specialized. And so they're looking for credibility. And so in order to establish credibility, you really have to show that you have the right type of intellectual property attorneys on your team as a startup, and that other angel investors that specialize in life sciences are involved in the project, and that your board of advisors of your startup company is composed of people with experience in the life sciences. So you can see that we're going to need a certain amount of subject matter expertise and mentors who are experienced in life sciences. And for that reason, a lot of people have said, boy, this is really going to be difficult. And I've talked with some folks in the Bay Area who specialize in these life science startups. And they have told me, yeah, Chris, this is going to be really difficult. And if you were located anywhere else in the country, I would say good luck. However, you're not located anywhere else in the country. You're located in Oregon. And Oregon is ripe to take off in this arena. So you can find this stuff in the Bay Area in spades. Stanford, you can find all of this stuff at Stanford. You can find all this stuff at Berkeley, UC San Francisco. And that's three institutions just in one region. But it's a unique region. But the same can be said for Boston, Philadelphia, and San Diego, the other major life science hubs in our country. But it's not like those places have an exclusive on innovation. These things can be developed elsewhere, but it is going to take a lot of dedication. It's going to take a lot of hard work, it's going to take a lot of dedication, and a lot of us in the community working together to connect all the pieces. And when I say us, I don't mean just us in the university, I mean us as a community. And look, many folks in the community have been working diligently to build pieces of this entrepreneurial ecosystem for years already. And there's been some success. I talked a little bit about RAIN earlier. But this entrepreneurial ecosystem for the sciences hasn't really taken off to the point where it's become self-perpetuating yet. But I think that we're at a moment because of the convergence of many different circumstances. But up until now, we just haven't had that platform. And this requires a platform. Doing this well requires a platform. Those beautiful buildings are the platform. The Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact is not just a campus. They're not just buildings. Really, the Knight Campus is a platform. It's a platform to connect the brightest minds from around the world, a platform to connect students to opportunity, to connect investors with ideas and problems to solutions, a platform to connect the community to science and the present to the future. The Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact is the platform for science advancing society.
Wow, what a vision. So let's take 5 minutes for you to come up with questions, and then you can line up on this side. Thanks.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the November the 3rd City Club program, Yovo Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. City Club is a nonprofit organization. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including AARP of Oregon, Awazagi Plastic Surgery, and Ziba Medical Spa, Evans, Elder, Brown, and Sorbert Commercial Real Estate, Gators Churnside in Balthrop, PC Attorney at Law, the University of Oregon Academic Extension, our friends at Dot Dotson Photography, and KRVM 91.9 Radio. Before we go to the members' questions, please remember to keep your questions short and to the point. Ready? Member, go ahead.
Mike Rose, City Club member. Chris, you have a great vision out here. And the question we have starts with, what ventures, contemporary investigations are already on the books in the planning session to be included in this process, knowing that new ones are going to be coming along all the time? And with that, is Oregon State being involved in the coordination with the University of Oregon at all?
Thank you, Mike, for the question. So the fields of research have not yet been determined. We have not yet hired a permanent director for the Knight Campus. We are currently engaged in a nationwide search. And once we get a director on campus, which we anticipate will be sometime this next year, then we will start the process with the new director of determining which fields of research will move into the campus first. Having said that, I believe that it's safe to say that this opens up a lot of opportunity for collaborations with other universities in the state. We've already begun some pretty heavy discussions with OHSU, Oregon Health Sciences University. We held a research summit with them this past April. I had the good fortune to be able to had the opportunity to facilitate one of several breakout sessions during that summit. That was 40 of our top researchers and 40 of their top researchers together meeting at Western Oregon University. I guess you could call that a neutral territory that's about halfway between the two institutions. And of course, they have they are the medical school, the public medical school in the state of Oregon, and they have the Knight Cancer Institute, and they're really embarking on a very aggressive mission there to try to beat cancer. Having said that, we have a lot of tools and resources at the University of Oregon that they do not have. And when we started comparing notes and we looked at what the University of Oregon is really strong at and where our weak spots are and what they're really strong at and what their weak spots are, there were a lot of, shall we say, chocolate and peanut butter moments, and where the two look like they would match up really well. And I expect that will continue to happen, and there will be opportunities like that for collaboration with other universities like OSU.
All right, next question.
So John Annick, City Club member for quite a while. What does this project mean for the university's ability to track projects from two sources that have quite a bit of money? One would be the firms in Silicon Valley, where they've driven up prices to where million-dollar homes are becoming quite common, and also the money from the expanding Chinese economy, which shortly will surpass our own in GDP.
Thank you, John, for that question. So there's no question that the Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact and all of the research that is happening there and the discovery that is happening there, there's no question that it will grab the attention of folks, not just from the Bay Area and the San Francisco Bay Area, but from Boston and Philadelphia and San Diego and some of those other life science hubs. But I think it is also going to attract the attention and something that we will look at in working with collaboration with other sort of second tier life science hubs. So I think that it's safe to say that there will be a lot of interest, and I'm not sure that I would say that that the growth of life sciences in and of itself in the San Francisco Bay Area has led to their housing crisis and the costs of everything being sky high. I think it's also safe to say that there will be a lot of interest from overseas. The emerging biotech sector is a part of many national plans, the plans of in different economies to really set a course for future economic development and growth. It's a big part of the Japanese growth plan. And there's some strategic focus on it in Taiwan, and I know there's some strategic focus on it in China. And I do think that there will certainly be the opportunity to collaborate with universities from across the pond. And in terms of the commercial aspects, that is yet to be seen, but there are certainly a lot of international players in biomedicine.
All right, next question.
Sandy Erickson, City Club member. Science is one thing, but what drives science, just like what drove tech, is an initial choices and value systems that are made. And tech is now having a problem with their value systems. So I'm wondering if there's some early conversation about what to focus on in terms of how to serve private or public interests, or even military? I mean, how do you focus where things are going to go?
I think that is, pardon me, I think that's a very astute observation and good question, Sandy. There's been a lot of conversation about that mission, science advancing society. And really for the researchers on the science advisory team who developed the proposal, and this was a grassroots up development of this proposal, it was born from a place of wanting to be able to take their discovery and move it out into the world for positive impacts on society. There's a great example of basic research that's basic discovery at the University of Oregon in Karen Gilliman's lab. Working with a researcher in her lab, they discovered in the microbiome, that's the bacteria in the gut, there's a protein that's produced by the bacteria in the gut that helps, or that has an effect on the production of insulin in the pancreas. Now, that's a basic discovery, and that's groundbreaking. How to take that discovery and turn it into something that is deliverable to a patient is where we call it applied. And that's really the motivation of what the scientists and the faculty members want to be able to do.
All right, next question.
John Doyle, City Club. And picking up on that a bit more, could you be a little more specific as to exactly what kind of life sciences we're talking about? And also, the $1 billion, is that just for the structure, or does that also include the equipment inside?
Thank you, John. I'll start with the first part of the question. So the specific fields of research within the life sciences has not been chosen yet because we don't have a director. So we are waiting to get a director, a permanent director on campus. We have an acting director, Patrick Phillips, who's really been our leader in standing this campus up and moving us forward. And he's done a brilliant job at it. Once we get a permanent director, those decisions, those conversations will start about what the permanent or what fields of research to move into the Knight campus are. In terms of the budget, the buildings are $225 million. So the rest of the $500 million gift, the 50 from the state, hopefully another 50 this next biennium, and then what we're going to raise to take us to 1.1 total. The rest of that is for, there's a certain amount for equipment, but it's mostly for faculty and to endow the faculty positions.
Okay, ready for the next question?
Dina Wills, City Club member since 2008. I worked at Lehigh University, where the engineering department, which included the sciences, ruled. And what they called the Arts and Crafts College was just there to sort of polish up the graduates from the real college. So my question is, how do you integrate this wonderful vision, which is really exciting, with the people in political science and English and languages, the university that's there on the old campus?
Dina, that is a great question. It's a good observation. The University of Oregon, even with the Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact, is still a liberal arts university. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. So there certainly has been a lot of conversation, and there should be a lot of conversation about this. I personally see the Knight Campus was providing more opportunity for multidisciplinary discussions around these topics. As I've been studying how other universities do these things, it's become apparent to me that some universities that do it really well, they incorporate their schools of design into efforts that are more applied into their entrepreneurial ecosystem. They incorporate the law school, they incorporate the business school, they incorporate ethicists. I mean, there's a whole bunch of, there are a number of fields of study at the university that are part of this larger ecosystem. I think that will take years to play out, because first we just need to get some buildings built and some basic research faculty hired, but I think it's a very astute observation.
All right, next question.
Yeah, John Reynolds, longtime City Club member. Specifically, will the new footbridge be nimble enough to accommodate the rest of the university and football crowds on Saturday?
John, you have no idea how much time has been spent discussing bridge designs. Actually, so the bridge that you saw in the image is designed to be able, is designed to carry students and faculty and research equipment across from one science building to another. So it doesn't go from street side to street side. And I think, you know, as we look to the North Campus plan and the future of the university is when we'll start looking at other means, like other bridges to, that would potentially span Franklin. That's way outside of my bailiwick, and I'm not really involved with those discussions at the university at this time. But this is a science building to science building connector bridge.
Great question, guys. And you guys are going right to the point, which I really appreciate. Next question.
Dan Solit, City Club's member since 2004. I don't think you adequately addressed Sandy's question in the previous question about the background of the moral and ethics and transparency of this project. I was just reading Oppenheimer's Farewell to the Troops speech in 1946, and it was the most pathetic, helpless, amoral speech that I have ever read. And so in the life sciences, you've got a possibility of the Kurt Vonnegut Ice-9 getting out there, nanoparticle research also has that opportunity, if you want to call it an opportunity. How strong an effort is a university going to make to provide transparency and history and ethics in this project? Do we want to be ground zero for Ice-9?
Well, I think that's a fair question, Dan, and the answer that I provided previously was the perspective of faculty that have developed the policy and faculty that continue to advise on the policy. So I'm not sure what else to say other than to say that some of those governance structures have not yet been established, but they will be established. And we have a building design right now, and we do not yet have a director. We have a new provost at the university who's getting his feet under him. We're engaging in this national search for a director. Once we get a director on campus working with the science advisory faculty and the provost, they will start to begin the process of establishing exactly what the governance structure, which I think is where those type of things lie. And I think it's a very fair question and it's an insightful question. I just don't have the answer yet, but stay tuned.
Okay, next question.
Chris, thank you very much for coming today. My name's Paul Thompson. And this is a softball question compared to the last one, so you can relax. It's a question from one of the people who are a guest today, and it broadly addresses the question of the protection of intellectual property and the secrecy and so on. Now, you've made the rounds of a number of the other facilities in the country, presumably have gotten the best practices images as to how you take young researchers, many of whom may not believe in secrecy, you take corporate sponsorship, there is a protection of information needed, but how do you enforce that and put it in such a way that the students and the sponsors are happy?
Thank you, Paul, for that question. The answer to that question is another three-hour topic. What I can tell you that I have learned, and again, I do not run the tech transfer office, and I'm not the vice president of research at the university who governs the tech transfer office or runs the tech transfer office. But what I have learned is that every university does it differently. And so as we get ready to embark on this grand vision, just like the question before, and by the way, that wasn't a softball question. just like the question before, where the answer is, this is going to be developed once we have the entire team in place. I think that, you know, that answer could apply to this as well. Some universities, the tech transfer function actually sits outside of the university. Some universities, it sits inside the university. There are different intellectual property ownership policies at different universities. And And then, of course, there is federal law that governs that governs this arena as well, particularly when the federal when it's federal research dollars that are involved. So I would stay tuned. That will definitely be a big part of the discussion that's happening in the next couple of years prior to commencing operations, but it is insightful, and as are most questions from the City Club. And
here we go.
Susan okay. Conley, City Club member since 2008. Thank you so much for coming today. The table from our question, the question from our table is that the university was built and paid for by the people of Oregon. And I realize we're paying less and less out of our taxes, but it's still our university. What complaints or concerns have you encountered about this program? Unfortunately, we haven't heard anything today from anyone else. Would you be willing to tell us what the concerns are? There surely must be some.
Thank you, Susan. I mean, the concerns that have been expressed here today in this forum are probably the most direct and pointed concerns that I have heard from folks. But I know that members of our community are thinking about these things. It's one of the reasons that we wanted to come and talk with the City Club. So this really, I mean, you know, the vision, how this plays out, how do you govern what the research ends up doing, those type of things are, and of course, what it means for the rest of the university, and will the rest of the university be forgotten? Things like that, those really are a big concern, you know, and they ought to be, and we are a public research university, and it is unfortunate that we have had to turn more heavily and heavily to philanthropy to fund big initiatives at the university, but you know, the state of Oregon supplies 7% of our budget, and that doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. And anybody that is waiting for that to happen and just wants to put bold initiatives on the back burner until the state steps up its contribution, I'm just telling you, as a former legislator and member of Ways and Means, it's not happening anytime soon. So,
all right, next question.
I love that direct statement. This, Mary Layton, representing Network Charter School and City Club since 2006. So we're pursuing a theme here. We are concerned that this rising tide becomes one that lifts all boats. And I realize that the implementation of the plan, or the big, more substantive parts of it, are something that will happen once you've hired a director. To what extent does the search for a director include some evidence that the person has already incorporated important aspects of university life in the scientific enterprise? So we can talk, all of us can probably make the case, well, yeah, the philosophers will be involved, and the ethicists, and the sociologists, and in the way that the discoveries unfold. But what gets measured is what gets done. And the beginning of measurement in this case is recruiting someone for whom that has been a demonstrated concern historically. So talk about the recruitment of the director and the extent to which that might, that is already being understood as a way to assure that something happens.
There's a lot there. I think I pretty much understand the question. So the director search is a national search. We are searching for somebody who is a renowned researcher in their own right, who also has the skills to as an administrator, to manage this academic enterprise and to work with other renowned researchers. So I do want to make clear that the Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact is not trying to be what the rest of the university is already. So this is a pivot and a and a move forward in this sliver of the university. It's not the majority of the university. It's this piece of the university, and to bring to the university an aspect that hasn't really been there in spades before. I mean, there's been, you know, of course there's commercialization that comes out of the university already, but it's not really big. And so this is an effort to really develop science with end impact, positive societal impact in mind. And it is also important that we remain relevant to what students want. I mean, entrepreneurship right now is hot. I mean, everywhere you go, I mean, there's podcasts about it, and I don't know how many magazines. You know, entrepreneurship is hot, and people want their college experience to really create opportunity for them. And so I think that, you know, the Knight campus is a different way of doing things. It is intentionally different. We're not trying to be the same. And it's going to create opportunity for students right here from in Oregon who maybe wanted to study the sciences. They wanted to be a microbiologist. They wanted to be a neuroscientist. And they wanted their career to be relevant. But they don't really want to leave home. You know, and so for the daughter of a sawmill worker who's able to afford in-state tuition at the University of Oregon and becomes a really strong student in the sciences and wants to continue working in the life sciences, is she going to be forced to move to Boston or the Bay Area or to San Diego? Or will she be able to establish a career right here at home? And that's really creating opportunity for students is really what the Knight campus is all about.
Before we thank our speaker today, there are a few quick announcements. Thank you, radio station KLCC 89.7, for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30. And thank you, Community Television of Lane County, Cable 29, for televising recent City Club programs. Next week, we have next Friday the 10th. Please join us for a presentation on expanding veteran services in Lane County. More details can be found at www.cityclubofeugene.org. Now, let's give us a big round of applause to our speaker, Chris Edwards. Thank you. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, and this concludes today's program. Thank you.